This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Takes a shot, runs into the box, shot, score!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and U.S. Soccer and the Shebelies Cup in Atlanta on April 6th. And Firehouse Subs, enjoy more subs, save more lives.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it, Atlanta. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. Welcome to our weekly show. We talk soccer in Atlanta, all over the state of Georgia, all over the Southeast, all over the United States, honestly, all over the world. It's just what we do on AST every single week. And it's a big week. International break is going on. It's almost done. There's a couple of games still happening at the moment. Mexico is trying to rescue their CONCACAF Nations League lives right now as they trail 2-0 against Honduras on aggregate, and they are still scoreless in Toluca right now in the 26th minute on Univision. But once that's done, the international break is done. Players are on their way back to clubs, or they're already back at their clubs, and it's perfect timing for Atlanta United because there's an Eastern Conference semifinal to play in Orlando this weekend. It's been a crazy run. We've all had a chance to catch our breaths, but everything is ramping back up. And today I had the chance to catch up with Rob Valentino for the first time since Fort Lauderdale, since game three, where Atlanta shocked honestly, the world. I mean, you can say shocked the MLS experts. You could say shocked the country, shocked some of the Atlanta United fan base, but shocked the world in eliminating Inter Miami. There's some Inter Miami news that we'll talk about later in the show as well. But I sat down with Rob after the team had regrouped for their first session of this week. They trained last week with the guys who were available. They worked in the gym. It was a very rainy morning in Marietta. Our friends Andy and Randy were out there for the midday show. You heard from Rob there. You heard from Jay Fortune as well. I got the chance to sit down with Rob for over 20 minutes and talk about everything that has happened here lately for Atlanta United. Here is the first part of our conversation. When I started things off just asking Rob how difficult it's been managing this international break and maintaining the momentum that the team had when they left Fort Lauderdale.
I mean, that's everybody's dealing with it, so it's no excuse there. Like you said, just trying to keep momentum. So the guys that are here that are training, we set objectives for them individually, essentially, almost about what we wanted to accomplish in the week right after the game. And then it's also able to get guys some time to recuperate from whether it's a knock or a little injury that they might have. So we prioritize those things. And then this morning was about getting everybody in the building, hey, let's remember what the momentum feels like. Let's remember what the feeling was after Miami, you know, and having games and making sure that we were playing and then winning, and that was great. And the feeling, making sure that we can bring that back. So we brought ourselves in, talked about that just verbally, quickly, but also then started to show some things on the video screens to kind of make sure they can remember, okay, this is what it feels like. Bring that right back, and then as guys come back from the national team, we just integrate them as quick as we can and get them ready to play.
I think so often we think about coaching and practices and lineup selection and tactics. How much of it is that stuff, managing momentum off the field, managing relationships? How much has that been an eye-opener for you?
I think the biggest thing for me is it's the relationship stuff for me. I look at that as that's your foundation, is having relationships with both staff, players. That part becomes huge, because when you get to this stage of the season, it's people have good tactics, people will have, everyone's got good players, you've got a reason why you're here, so what takes you over that 5% more, or what was going to kind of make the difference there? So being able to rely on relationships and build on those as the season goes becomes really important. I think, you know, like, yeah, I just think that's a huge part. The momentum thing, you can't control how that works, but I think that you can do little things to, whether it's to break a skid or to, you know, to keep the momentum going your way, you can do little things to try to help. And yeah, tactics are really important. So lineup selection, but ultimately, like, what we've learned, especially in this playoff so far, we've looked at, there's been so many different players that played and contributed. And I think that is awesome. I love that, because it really shows that if we're going to do something this year, it's going to be together and it's going to be the whole team. And I really love that part of it, because that makes the players making sure that they're on it every single day and that they just never know when their number will be called.
How do you balance that? The relationship building with guys in the locker room, guys who are playing, guys who are not playing, with the way you want your team to play, not tactical, but from like an identity, a philosophy standpoint, and then balancing the game-to-game tactics. How do you keep all of that in alignment?
Yeah, I think there's behaviors that we stand for and there's behaviors we don't stand for. So very early on, I think that's the tricky thing, is that you have to do those things early on. So whether it's you're just taking over a team or you get the preseason to start with your team, you have to start on those things right away. So the behaviors that you want your team to show and exemplify out in the field, you got to make sure that that's there every day. And that can be draining, that you're spending more time talking about individual behaviors or a guy throwing their arms up or whatever it might be that you have. And then from there, okay, how do they fit into the tactics and how does that work? But ultimately, like, the relationship building can be, it can be tricky, because there's guys that are playing feel more love than the guys that aren't playing. And I was joking with Tristan and Shonda the other day, because they were having a little joke back and forth with me, and I told them, I said, oh yeah, just remember, I only care about you when you play. And Tristan started looking at me funny, and I said, yeah, seriously, if you play, that's the only time I care. If you don't play, why would I care about you? You don't do anything for me. And he quickly realized that I was obviously telling a joke, that he realizes that I show up no matter what, and I'm there for them, whether they're playing, not playing, because I value each member on the team. So it was a good reminder for them and myself to know that no matter how many minutes they play, they're valued here as people and as players, because they've all got different attributes that can be called upon at any time.
I know different times in interviews you've downplayed the tactical side of it, but I'm going to give you a ton of credit on the tactical things that you've done, because it's been fascinating. Like, you've played so many different shapes, so many different ways of playing. You know, how hard has it been to settle on what has been working here lately?
Games are hard regardless. Like, it can be, it's difficult to win in this league or just to win in general, right? I think, I am adaptable. Us as a staff, we're very adaptable, so we're not married to one formation. We try to do the best thing for the team at the time to play against that team. There are certain tactics that we think this team is set up to do better than others, and right now we're just trying to make sure we get the most out of the players that we have. So being adaptable has been one thing. And yeah, I think it is – yeah, it could be difficult, but each game presents something different. So Miami was a lot about transitions. This game against Orlando could be something completely different that might be the benefactor of, or on the other side, could be a game-deciding play.
Now that they're kind of in the rearview mirror with Miami, I'd love to ask you, second half of game three, first half, it felt like they were really finding a lot of space out wide on the left. They were getting in behind. Gomez and Alba were kind of interchangeable getting in behind. They weren't able to do that in the second half. Was that something that you guys kind of identified, a tweak that you made, or did the game just evolve?
The game probably evolved. Like I don't want to take much credit for it, but it was definitely something we touched on at halftime. Yeah. You know, I can think specifically Gomez running into that space, especially when the handball one on Ronald was called back. That was a movement we had seen before, we talked about, and so it was another highlight of like, hey, if this happens, this is what you need to do with it, because it was pretty patterned out in terms of what was happening. So that was a emphasis at halftime, and then from there, yeah, we didn't see much of it. But I think also second half of games, especially against them, it can get open and different things happen, so you're managing a whole different fire.
Yeah, the it was fascinating to see that, because that was my concern going into halftime, was like, all right, how does this get sorted out? And it felt like it was at least in check a little bit more in the second half. You mentioned video, though. How important is video in what you do from a tactical perspective, but also from that relationship building perspective we've talked about?
I think it's huge. Like I look at like the work that the staff do on a daily basis and on a week to week basis, whether it goes down to Jose, our video analyst, or it goes down to Matt Lowry and Robbo and Liam. Even we've got Jack Kimber, our fitness coach, watching opponents and more for his personal knowledge and understanding what we're facing. But I think that stuff becomes such a cool tool to use. And everybody sees something a little bit different. Matt and Robbo are able to pull individuals and have all their individual actions from the game and sit down and go over with them. They're able to pull unit stuff to look at opposition, to look at our stuff. So I think, and then we look at the bigger team picture stuff. So I think it's definitely a really cool tool to use. And being really intentional about what we do. We talk about being intentional on the field, but also in our work off the field. Our meetings aren't very long. We try to keep them between 10, 12 minutes so that we keep everyone's attention, because we understand that they're human and their attention spans are very short. So we want to make sure it's engaging and that it's not also just a one-way street, that, hey, I see this in the clip, what do you guys see? And that there's back and forth, because when it comes down to it, they are the ones on the field and they're the ones that see things a little bit differently. They know what they can physically do a little bit better than maybe we think we know that they can do. So yeah, it becomes a very useful tool that we use a lot.
You talked about your staff and how it's been a collective effort. What is that mix of personalities with somebody like Carl, who's been there and done that, a veteran, somebody like Matt, who, you know, you've said kind of the academic way of looking at it, a different perspective. How much has it helped you to have not just one type of coach supporting you, but a lot of different people?
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. Like, you learn something from them almost every day. I also think that the best thing about them is that they're not just going to say yes. And I mean that in a respectful way. We have disagreements about what we might see or a decision that we might make as a collective staff, and we're able to air that out, and I think that's the best part about it, because we all want the same thing. We all want to, whether it's really enjoy every single day, which has been a big emphasis. We want to win at the end of it. We want to be successful and help these players be successful. That's the biggest thing here. We're here to serve the players, and that has been really awesome, that we have a staff that can collaborate and really get along, even when it's maybe not getting along about something. So having the respect for each other, that we can have a disagreement or we can have a different opinion, and we can voice it in the right way to make sure we walk out of that room with one voice, one message that's going forward to help the players. So I've really enjoyed working with all of them, because they have different skills in their own job, but then they all have different personalities and they bring something and different experiences that bring something cool to our staff.
I want to ask you about your experiences a little bit, like this run that you've been on, and after the Montreal game. It's 4-1-1 overall. The Montreal loss at home. Is there a time from your playing career, maybe a lesson, a coach that you've had that has kind of stuck with you in helping turn it around a little bit?
That's a really good question. I wasn't prepared for that one.
I like to throw curveballs at you.
Yeah. I'd love to give somebody credit for somewhere. I don't really have one instance. I mean, I can touch on just two different coaches that I really enjoyed playing for, that maybe help in a moment like this where you're not letting your highs get too high or your lows too low, essentially. Because you talk about being on a run, like it doesn't feel like that in some way. Yeah. You're just living every moment as it comes. But Adrian Heath that was in Orlando and then in Minnesota as well, was somebody that that really preached on you know, never giving up and having a mentality that there's no passengers, and making sure you pull everybody along, whether it was in a good moment or a bad moment. And then I always go back to my club coach growing up, Harry Demos, and it was more about the foundational piece that I touched on, like that relationship and the way he cared on us and the way he loved on us. I think was really important as young adults growing up as soccer players. We were all striving to be professionals, but he knew that that might not be the case, but he treated us like young men that needed to have team first behaviors. And I look at that like, then no matter where you are, good or bad in the season, on a run in the playoffs, or you're at the bottom of the table, like it's about how you interact as humans. And I think that part has taken me a long way.
We've got to take a quick break and pay some bills. More to come with Rob Valentino in our exclusive Atlanta Soccer Tonight interview coming up right after this on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
When it comes to the world of soccer, we've got you covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Part two of my sit-down with Rob Valentino from earlier today coming up right in just a second. One thing I wanted to touch on from that first portion in the first segment of the show, the value of building relationships. And I think one thing that has been evident about this group is that took a little bit of time. Coaching changes, not a shock that building relationships between the coaching staff and the players takes time for it to be its strongest. Well, after the international break, after the League's Cup break, and we talk about that here a little bit in this next segment, I think you started to see the fruits of that relationship building really come to the fore for this group. Here's part two of my conversation from earlier today with Rob Valentino.
Shoot, there's probably a lot. I mean, there's three games. There's so much that went into all those games. That first game was really enjoyable because of all the circumstances that went into it. So there's just the way the injuries went in the first half and having to adapt and change and still fighting towards the end. I think that was awesome. Game two, of course, you're going to look at the end of the game and the way it all unfolds. Like, that's pretty incredible. In game three, probably had just a lot of different things. I'm laughing because I'm thinking about Brad in there. That's an easy one. I'm sure if he ever listens to this, he'll love that. I don't have one thing. Ultimately, at the end of it, making sure that we advanced, I think that'll be what I take from it now, and that we survived and we moved on.
I mean, we talked about it. Game one was, to me, a really special game. It's one that I told you that I would always remember what it felt like to call it, and it was a loss. And then you guys topped it with game two, and I'm like, okay, this is going to be that game. And then game three was a whole nother animal. Mm-hmm. Just the roller coaster of that series, it felt like a whole season wrapped into three games.
Yeah, it sure did. I mean, it's funny when I talk to my wife and then you talk to my family, my mom, my dad, and they're asking, like, what are you feeling in those moments? And I'm like, not what you guys are feeling. Yeah. I can imagine as somebody that's watching it on TV, and it probably feels a lot worse. So I have zero control on what goes on once that ball starts rolling in terms of being able to actually do the work for them. But there is a calmness when we're out there. But I think we all thrive in those moments, us as a staff, us as player, the team as players, like they thrive in these moments. So it's been really enjoyable. Hopefully they're not as chaotic, but hopefully the memories keep coming, because that's what we play for.
I wanted to ask you about, we've talked about the relationships with players a lot, and something that struck me since that Montreal loss at home is how fearlessly the players have played. You know, everybody knew the situation. You know, they're lost, and it's probably season over, everything's done. And they haven't played in a defensive way. So many times you see teams in that moment say, well, we can't lose. This team has went to attack every time, and they've played without being afraid of anything. How have you transmitted that to this group? How have you helped them not be afraid of the situation?
Yeah, I don't know if I have, like, I don't know if I can take all the credit for it, but at the same time, like, my message has been very consistent about continuing to show up in good moments and bad moments, that there's no way around it. So once that Montreal game happened, and obviously I was really not happy about that and really devastated, but my thought was, when it happened, now what's the way forward? So I look at what the way forward was, to keep showing up, put pressure on teams. Like, hey, for anything, winning games will help you put pressure on other teams. That will make teams nervous, and then other teams might play a little bit more defensive, or they might play a little bit more safe as it comes towards the end. I've been trying to get them to play with less fear. They have nothing to lose. Like, for me, I don't mind mistakes. I want them to make new mistakes. I want those mistakes to happen, because through mistakes come growth. And luckily, at this moment, they have that mentality, and hopefully that can continue.
Brad's talked about it. Others have talked about it, with how I think they've adapted to playing without the ball as much. And maybe they didn't have that trust that they could do it before. That's the other element to me that jumps out to this run, is guys have each other's backs consistently. And it feels like they trust in one another to either make a good play or help fix a mistake. Is that something that you've seen grow in this group during your time? That they've trusted each other.
Yeah, it's definitely something that we thought we needed to highlight of getting better at, because you can't just be one side of the ball. It doesn't work that way. In my opinion, it doesn't work that way. Yeah. So it was something that we emphasized, to be better off the ball. So my dad had this, and you guys have all heard it, but like, offense wins games and defense wins championships.
Yep.
I would say I almost like channeled that. I kept hearing him say that in my head, of like, all right, well, if you can be really solid and you can still have somewhat of your dangerous attack, we're going to score goals. If we can give up less goals, then we can be in a better position just overall as the season was kind of developing. And now in these moments, it becomes huge. I think that it's not about not wanting the ball. It's just about making sure that we have to respect opponents that have been doing a really good job at this all year long, that they are good with the ball. Where do we want them to go, and where do we want them not to go, so we can punish teams in just a different way. So whether it's an attacking transition with the pace that we have, or whether it's maybe if it's in our buildup and we're a little bit more intentional with possession, we need to have different facets to our game, and defending has been no different.
That's what's so fascinating to me, is, you know, we can say like, yeah, possession is less. Okay, fine. But then you have that goal where there's 35 passes before the goal. We can say like, yeah, they've defended well deep, but there's also been moments where they've pressed and turned teams over in the attacking half and created moments out of that. So it's been a really diverse tactical group. Mm-hmm. Has that happened naturally, or was that by design?
I mean, it's the evolution of where we're at, probably. I mean, it was June 3rd was the Charlotte game when the decision was made for the coaching change, and it's never easy to take over partway through, because how much can quote unquote change, how much really needed to change, like things I felt like just needed to go our way. And so if you look at it with the games being our trial by fire a little bit, and trying to adapt as each game went, because we didn't have a lot of training time, I think we are seeing an evolution of a team a little bit that can have different threats, whether it's defensively, whether it's transition, whether it's on the attack. And I think what I can say I've been consistent is that each game will be something different. Each opponent we look at in a different way and a different game plan. So that is by design in that way.
How important was that League's Cup break in making the team yours?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't about making it mine. It was just about getting a break for a second and resetting and going, okay, we've failed at this. Like, we wanted to advance and we've not accomplished something. So let's take that on the chin. Let's learn from our mistakes, because there was things that we probably did pretty well in both the games. Maybe not enough to really get through, and maybe that's the best thing for us. So we were able to train a little bit more, come together as a group a little bit more, and really figure out what did we want out of the last, I think it was 9 games then we had left in the regular season after that. I think it was that. So we were really looking at how we wanted to accomplish that last part of the season.
Yeah, it felt like the identity of the team kind of came together after that. There were setbacks. I mean, there were games that you're not happy with, but felt like there was definitely a line in that moment where the team started to resemble, I think, how you wanted them to look on the field.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of team behaviors, yeah, it definitely took a shift in terms of what I expect out of players, individuals, in the group in general. It's been a work in progress. It's definitely not exactly where we all want it to be, but ultimately now it's about winning games and getting to the final stage.
And we'll talk a lot about it this week as we get ready for Orlando, so I don't want to get into that super deep, but last one I'll ask you is just how hard is it to face a team that, I know Miami you played 3 times in a row, but Orlando you saw recently. Mm-hmm. How hard is it in a way to see them again so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, it's looking at it in a way of we had success because we won the game, but maybe the game wasn't as pretty because it was about just grinding and finding the result. So they'll have some of that resemblance in it. They're not gonna change anything, but maybe they are going to be a little bit more solid. You look at the games against Charlotte, there wasn't much between the two of them, and that's what the playoffs are like. So the hard part for me is that you have played them so recently, and then they might have the extra little motivation that you beat them at home. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that's it. But other than that, it's just, it helps in our preparation. These guys have just faced them. They know what it felt like being in that stadium. They know what it felt like. Those little experiences, I think we'll take and we'll try to be better for it the next game too.
I can't thank Rob and Atlanta United enough for giving me that much time to get ready for this big game with Orlando. And hopefully that conversation gives you a lot of insight into who Rob Valentino is. I think as a person, as a coach, how he kind of feels the game. And look, don't let him fool you. He is an incredibly humble man. The growth that we have seen in Rob Valentino as a coach from previous interim stint to this one, the growth that we have seen in Rob as a coach before the League's Cup and after, and I think the growth that you have seen in this team in this playoff run, even after that Montreal home loss, where it's all down to pretty much can't lose anymore. Get into the Game 3, different conversation. The 3-game series, you could lose one, and they did, and they picked themselves up. But the steady progression has been so impressive. He has been very good with tactics and little tweaks and things. Each game has been different. There have been different wrinkles. Maybe not things that jump off the page at you, not crazy wild shapes that have been different, although he has changed the shape quite a few different times over his time in charge of Atlanta United in 2024. It's been very, very impressive. One of the most impressive playoff runs, one of the most impressive last, 6 games, like I said, since the Montreal loss at home, 4-1-1 overall. It's been a great run. There's still more to do. And when you look at Orlando, and even looking over at the other side of the Eastern Conference bracket at the New York Red Bulls and New York City, Atlanta did not lose to any of those teams this year. They have consistently elevated their game to play the best teams in the East, and they're going to have to do that on Sunday afternoon in Orlando. Coming up next, one more segment on Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Three local stories, four headlines, three things that make me smile about this game that I love so much. It's the 3-4-3, next in five on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's time to wrap up tonight's show with the 3-4-3.
3-4-3.
Three local stories, four headlines from around the world, and three things that made you smile about the game.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's time for the 3-4-3, brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. Y'all know how AST ends by now. I'm Jason Longshore. Three local stories, four headlines, three things that make me smile about this game that I love so much. Let's start on the local side as we do. Number one, the USU-20s were on a European tour during the international break, and Atlanta United's Luke Brennan was part of that squad and got on the score sheet for the first time for the U-20 squad. He's trying to play his way into a World Cup roster spot next season at the U-20 World Cup. Number two on the local side, Emory's women. They are into the Sweet 16 of the NCAA D3 Women's Tournament. Won two games at home over the weekend. They are going to have to travel for the Sweet 16, but a big job done by Sue Patberg and her squad. Number three, the D2 National Championships are getting started this week. Multiple Georgia schools are part of it. You've got the Clayton State men, who did lose in the Peach Belt Conference Championship match, but received an at-large bid. You've got the Columbus State women, who did win the Peach Belt Conference Championship, and North Georgia, who fell in the semifinal. All of them are starting play later this week. Clayton State's men, they will play Converse University on Sunday at 3 o'clock in Spartanburg, South Carolina. The North Georgia Nighthawks, they are in the number three seed in the region and will face Wingate in the first round of the D2 Women's Tournament. They got past Wingate last year on penalties. And Columbus State, number two team in the country in D2 Women's Soccer, 19-0-1. They earned automatic qualification after winning the Peach Belt Conference Tournament. They are hosting the regional this weekend. Number one seed in the Southeast region. They will play Francis Marion, the eighth seed. Four headlines from around the world. Number one, Tata Martino is not going to return in Miami. It was announced today, at least reported today. It's not been officially announced, let me be clear. The Miami Herald, Associated Press, Give Me Sport. Tom Bogert had it first with Give Me Sport. Martino will step away from the job due to personal reasons, according to the reports. A Friday press conference has been scheduled to make the decision official. Club owner Jorge Mas and president of football operations Raul Sanheli will attend the press conference. Number two on the headlines, the U.S. men's national team, they got past their CONCACAF Nations League quarterfinal against Jamaica. Good performances. It was punctuated with a big win in St. Louis last night. Also a win in Kingston, Jamaica last week. So two straight wins against Jamaica in the first games that count for Mauricio Pochettino. One of the things that stood out to me last night in the win was how creative the buildup was, with Anthony Robinson tucking inside from his left back role and really creating a lot of space that the U.S. thrived in. Here's Mauricio Pochettino speaking about that tactical shift.
I think we try different way to play and our build up. I think we are going to do some tests in the future also. Our second training camp, I think the first was more simple. All the ideas that second time was to implement some different, you know, using different players in different position to try that, not to give reference to the opponent, that rotation, that mobility to appear and to change position, I think is in the way that we like to play and we want to play. And I think what we were finding is see the player performing in different position, maybe non-natural position, but become a natural way with time. But I think is, yes, it's a thing that we are going to keep improving, keep testing also. I think the objective is 2026 to arrive in our best condition with the capacity, with all the characteristics that we have from the player, with the player that we have, is to find the best, you know, way to perform.
Love to see the progression from the U.S. men's national team. And big thank you to U.S. Soccer and Veritone for the media clips after the match last night in St. Louis. Number three on the headlines portion of the 3-4-3 on AST, South American World Cup qualifying. It's been an interesting ride. Not any real major surprises in terms of who is going in the automatic spots right now. Maybe a mild one at the bottom end. But Argentina is on the top of the South American table. They moved a little further ahead of everybody with a win 1-0 over Peru in Buenos Aires. A goal from Lautaro Martinez, assisted by that guy, Lionel Messi. Great assist, great goal from Lautaro. Earlier today, Bolivia and Paraguay, they drew 2-2 in La Paz. Our friend Efrain Morales of Atlanta United, he played the second half for Bolivia, earned his first cap and played the whole 90 in a loss last week on the road. Ecuador, a bit of a surprise today. They went to Colombia and won 1-0 on a great goal from Ener Valencia. Chile, they notched a big win at home, a much-needed win for them, 4-2 over Venezuela. And Brazil, they're in an automatic qualification spot. They've got a cushion. It's not pretty, though. They drew 1-1 with Uruguay in Brazil, and there were some boos, maybe substantial boos at the final whistle would be a fair way to put it. So you look at the table in South America. Argentina's on top with 25 points. Uruguay in second with 20. Two teams on 19, Ecuador and Colombia. Brazil is in fifth place on 18. That is an automatic qualification spot now where it wasn't in the past. Paraguay is on 17 points. They are in sixth. Only 8 goals in 12 games, and 2 of those were today. But they're in sixth, and they have a cushion in terms of being in an automatic qualification spot. The playoff spot now is 7th in South America, and Bolivia is in that with their draw today. They're on 13 points. Venezuela is 1 point behind them after the loss today. They're on 12. Chile, they've still got time. They're 4 points back on 9. Peru, yes, they have time, but they're 6 points back and 2 teams back. They're in last place. They're on 7 points. Everybody's got 6 games left in South American World Cup qualifying. That playoff spot is going to be fascinating. I think the top 6 are good. I think Paraguay will hold on to the bottom end of it. I'm not 100% sure, but I think they will. Number 4 on the headlines. Big announcement today in New York, U.S. Soccer. They announced a historic gift for its women's and girls soccer programs from businesswoman Washington Spirit, team owner, multiple team owner worldwide, and women's sports advocate Michelle Kang. She has pledged to give U.S. Soccer $30 million over the next 5 years, which is the largest philanthropic investment in U.S. Soccer's women's and girls programs ever, and the most generous donation ever made to U.S. Soccer by a woman. She spoke to the media today, and here is what Michelle Kang had to say about her donation.
This announcement is deeply personal for me. This represents more than just financial support. It's about establishing an enduring foundation for the future of women's soccer. A foundation that starts with youth level and expands to include players, referees, coaches, and staff. And one that will create a self-sustaining ecosystem where soccer can thrive long-term for women and girls across the nation. We can't build lasting success by focusing solely on professional teams, leagues, or dedicated training facilities and stadiums. They're all great, necessary. But to truly professionalize and elevate the women's game, it's essential to me that we develop every element of the ecosystem, starting from the earliest stage of soccer development.
Big thank you once again to U.S. Soccer and Veritone for that clip. And that leads me right in to the three things that make me smile about the game that I love. And what Michelle Kang just said, she's so on the money with that, because I think at times in American soccer, we focus on where things are at the professional game and that dictates everything, or the national teams and that dictates everything. That doesn't happen without the grassroots, without the coaches, without the referees, without opportunities for players to grow and be seen and be noticed. All of it is what's needed. You can't just focus on the growth on the professional side, which is outstanding. MLS, record attendance this year. NWSL, record attendance this year. More eyeballs on the top two leagues in this country than ever before, and it is such a good thing. But there has to be intention below that to develop the rest of that ecosystem, as Michelle Kang said. An amazing donation to, you have to remember, U.S. Soccer is a nonprofit. They're a 501c3. Arthur Blank made a huge donation to help bring the National Training Center here to the Atlanta area. Michelle Kang has now made a sizable donation to support the women's and girls programs across U.S. Soccer, and I can't wait to see how that is going to benefit that sustainability and that overall development of the women's game in this country. And I would like to see someone on the men's side take up that challenge and look at things in the same holistic way. Number two on things that make me smile, no more international breaks in 2024. I hate that in the fall you have international breaks in September and then a month later in October and then a month later in November. It's really bad for MLS and the U.S. leagues because you're at the end of your seasons and you're disrupting the playoffs, and maybe that's one big benefit from changing the calendar, right? It is very disruptive in Europe as well because you're at the beginning of your season. It's hard to get any kind of a rhythm. It's hard to get any kind of a flow to how your team is coming together when it's stop-start, 3 weeks on, and you're off a week, and it's just, I hate it. FIFA has to rearrange the international calendar. The international games are a necessity. They are very, very important. The World Cup is the biggest international sporting event in the world. But the way we get there and the continental tournaments and all of the different national team games, it has to be slimmed down. It has to make more sense. Please, FIFA, and please, national federations and continental confederations, please sit down and make some common sense out of it. Number three, things that make me smile about this game that I love so much. Games that matter in November. And Atlanta United's got a big one coming up on Sunday. It's Orlando, so it's a rivalry. Atlanta beat them just a couple of weeks ago. Atlanta's had a lot of success in that building. And from what I am hearing, there are going to be a lot of Atlanta United fans making the trip down to Central Florida for this one. If you cannot, we will be live from Orlando on Sunday, Eastern Conference semifinal, Atlanta United, Orlando City. Pre-game coverage, it starts at 2:30 p.m. Kickoff is set for 3:40. You can listen to it right here on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Full-time report will follow with audio from Orlando. Win or lose, Atlanta United's made an incredible run. Season is not done. They do have to win to keep it going. That win could come in regulation. That win could come in extra time, because we do have that into the mix now. That win could come in penalties. Whatever it takes, Atlanta United's going to Orlando trying to knock them out and to move on to the Eastern Conference Final for the first time since 2019. Atlanta Soccer Tonight's going to be back next Tuesday night, 10 o'clock, to break down all of it. Maybe looking ahead, maybe looking back, maybe doing a little bit of both. Join me next week at 10 o'clock, but join us on Sunday for Atlanta United and Orlando City. Adios, everybody.